Welcome to the Forgettable Reads Podcast, a no-nonsense sleepcast for the rest of us. No creepy whispering, no bad spa music, no sleepy monotone. Just sincere reads of boring, bland material for all your verbal white noise needs. And now your host, Lauren Good.
Hello, my dear friends, and welcome to episode 16. After tonight, we will have three more episodes until we wrap season two, What New Normal? And while you are still awake, I'd love to ask you what topics you would like Alex and I to consider and marinate on for season three during our hiatus. Why even go on hiatus? I mean, for heaven's sake, it's a zone out, tune out, forgettable reads podcast. Why does it need to go on hiatus? Here's my answer. Because a life spent in nonstop production, while very invigorating and satisfying, can also lead to burnout. Just like if you hit the gym hard and heavy every day for a month, you never really allow your muscles to build. The workout process creates micro tears that during rest and sleep repair and gives you gains in strength and mass. The same is true for creative juice. The proverbial plants can't just continuously be harvested. You have to plant new ones and take time to nurture them. Or, as Julia Cameron says in The Artist's Way, you need to do some living that is just about the joy of experience in order to keep your artist well filled. And so that, my dear friends, is why we will have 10 season episodes and then go on hiatus to grow the next season's crop. And I would really love to hear from you on what you might like to see us plant. So you can head to Facebook and shoot a message to the @ForgettableReads page. Or if you prefer, you can send me a message on Instagram @goodhabits. And that is spelled like my last name, G-O-O-D-E, habits, good, with a bonus E. That being said, tonight's reading will be a little different than our past article and AI-generated dialogues. It's actually going to be a collection of writing that I did myself during lockdown when I took a virtual writing retreat with Natalie Goldberg. During this retreat, we would begin each session in meditation so that we could try to drop below our wild horse monkey mind thoughts and tap into our more connected minds. Spoiler alert, I wasn't able to do so at any point during lockdown or the retreat itself. But I saved the writing as a reminder to do as James Clear suggests in Atomic Habits, to focus on the process, not on the outcome. The game well played will take care of the score. In this, I know I am not alone. Even my best friend just texted me that her daughter is basically terrified about having her first performance today, and she is nervous that hundreds of people will be watching. I said, wow, I know what that feels like. When I go to staff training on Monday nights at the trapeze school, or when I sign up for trampoline class and the head coach is teaching, even though there are only a handful of eyes actually watching, it does feel like 100. It's the pressure to perform. And it only exists because I get attached to having a successful outcome. If I fail to hold the staff member on the board correctly during my board operator training session, that means I won't advance to get a staff position at the new school. And if I fail to get a staff position at the new school, I won't be able to participate in flying trapeze, trampoline, or sling as often as I like and want to. If I fail to get my trampoline trick, which is called a cradle, in better form, I will not be able to fly out of lines and will continue, in my mind, to slow everyone at staff fly down. Which, of course, won't be a problem if I fail at the board operator training. This kind of harkens back to what we talked about in the last episode. Our non-constructive ego will grip so tightly at achieving desirable outcomes or keeping us safe from the big bad enemy of humiliation that we basically strangle all the joy and love out of the journey. I am on a mission to liberate myself and as many people as I can from this vicious cycle. I will be a catalyst of change in any way I can. by sharing my personal experience with it, to making fun of myself, and always trying to find the humor. Humor, to me, is always the antidote to taking ourselves and our goals too seriously. Life is a dance. My best friend's daughter does not yet realize that she will be adorable and loved no matter what she does during the performance, including standing completely still. Why? Because she is a delight. She is a delight just by being. For myself, whether I fly in lines or out of lines, whether I can start coaching other flyers as a board operator or not, I mean, how freaking lucky am I to get to do circus fitness adventuring, especially at the beach, at sunset, when the view is absolutely magical? How will I even notice that I'm learning and where I'm improving if I set myself these black and white goals of success and failure? I mean, what kind of life does that lead to? So, as a recovering perfectionist and overachiever, I choose to re-educate myself. I choose happiness. I choose the journey over any destination. I choose to see mistakes as opportunities for growth. I choose to simply take action and see what happens, with a playful sense of curiosity when possible, and to forgive myself when not. And above all else, I choose love. Love is an active verb, and it is a muscle I know we can strengthen. And now for tonight's reading, a collection of vignettes from the 2021 lockdown from Lauren Good, when she refused to just settle into the process and instead felt pressure to perform and guilt for not writing anything pretty. March 20th, 2021. Assignment 1. Four memories of noise, and be specific. Noise is something I have become increasingly sensitive to as a voice actor. The hum of motors, footsteps above, cabinet doors thudding to a close, whirring and buzzing sounds both near and far, the bass response of the room, dogs that bark, whine, and panic when left alone for too long by busy parents. The noise of my mind is deafening, especially this week, an endless loop of arguments which creates an impulse to fantasize a scene where I can finally win. Practicing my videos and webinars so that I don't feel foolish or unprepared, the worries that I may not actually know what is useful to say and what is just self-generated noise that wants to hear itself spoken out loud. Fear and shame make noise so unbearable. I often implode or collapse in a puddle. I pull the blankets up tighter around my trembling body as my mind attempts to escape by eating itself if necessary. The noise of Natalie texting on her phone while we are all trying to write and no one is muting her or turning her camera off. Oh, my mind knows this game very well. Let's zoom in and get super frustrated with her seeming lack of self-awareness so that she is written about in my mind in vivid detail as the opponent and the reason why I can't write anything original. Instead of following the theme of writing, I can instead turn my energy to something more attainable. Her character can be destroyed swiftly and purely in my mind, and the vibrations change. There is less light. Humor is gone. There is no sense of connection or play. I have starved myself of the very things I need in this life. I have actually become the noise that distracts and is a burden to those around itself. But what to do about it? Confession feels so heavy and somber. Falsely effusing positivity is emptiness. I must get out. I must get out. Will you release me? Was that even four descriptions? Oops. Assignment 2, directions to your home. Maps are helpful in understanding territory. They give you a series of reference points, but it is hard to describe the state of what is and where we actually are. So So we reach a reference point. I am on the 12th floor of a building in Chicago, which is near the lake. My crossroads are such and such. The address contains these numbers. But in order to give you directions to my apartment, I have to know where you are. I must change my reference points to your reference points. And let me tell you, giving you directions to my house are much easier than to my true home. Directions for each other to connect our hearts. In that way, we want directions of how to be happy. When we give directions, we first have to settle on a destination. That destination might be to launch a successful career, to bake a cake, to learn a new trade. But all the while, what we really want, what we really truly want, is to lead a happy life. The cake tastes good, but it doesn't taste like happiness. The new trade is pretty cool, but it doesn't feel like fulfillment. If I try to find the directions like that, the ones that lead to where we really want to go, it just comes out like gibberish that was typed into a chat box on Zoom by a toddler who has been compelled to complete pre-kindergarten online, virtually. Now, toddlers just enjoy trying new things. She loves to entertain herself and find out what will happen if she presses the next button. You see, for me to write myself directions home to a fulfilled, happy life full of connection and joy will only ever be based on reference points of pain in my life. What I know to be true is to support the person, not the results, not the behavior. Love the sinner, not the sin, and to trust. Trust in what? Trust in whom? Now we are getting closer. Trust in space? Trust in truth? God? Trust in cause and effect? Trust in the nature of humanity? Trust in reality? Trust. Is it a state or a feeling? Following this rabbit hole seems to even turn the word and the letters on its head. Trust the people, the magic, the grace, get out of the way. But what does that even mean? Do you build it like a muscle? Do you grapple with it like a demon? Or do you get drunk on it like it's a fine wine and you sip rather than slam it down? Why are concepts like hard sounds trapped between vowels? And why on earth is softness the result of so much heat and tension? Can you find my home yet? Are the directions clear? Assignment 3, the poetry exercise, 5 syllables, 7, 5. She says she will write, loses train of thought, we continue reading. Afraid I will forget, my pen hits the page, I must remember. Control is hard tense shoulders. She wasn't listening. Stop being voyeuristic. Cup marks turn red. This is better than purple, says the smug expert in control. Count how many. Oh, good. Assignment done. This is 5. Assignment 4. How do you wake up? This is a story of contrast, and I doubt the timer has a mind to let me finish it. When left to my own devices and the actor's habit of circadian disrhythm, I am awake all hours of the night until the wee hours of the morning. Unable to quiet the mind from having to be at peak so late in the evening from performance. Perhaps by 10 a.m., maybe noon, a grumpy bear with one pant leg down and the other calf height stumbles into the kitchen in search of her only passion that early in the day, coffee. Must become awake and human. Epic movie-like dreams must fade into forgotten shadows so the necessary, organized, practical thoughts of logic, strategy, and adulting must be deployed. Secret mission number 2, avoid other humans who have leveled up faster to a place of functional language. Bear grunts and growls are often misunderstood by the perky. This was me as the former kid who begrudged responsibility when it competes with leisure. I'll do it, but I gotta have time to ramp up to the right frame of mind. Once there, it's okay, can be fun, or at least tolerable, depending on what it is. That was then. This is now. Before bed, the kitchen marker hits the whiteboard on the fridge, asking for advice and guidance from the alethiometer of this world. Sleep, if possible, or laying still and counting breaths while resting eyes and body, if not. The window of wake-up times and alarms begin at 5:30 a.m. and can be artificially extended by my future phone box until 8 a.m., but 6 to 7 in the morning is the average data point. Coffee is still my favorite, but it is less of a full-blown production thanks to my new tech and a wonderful play called Evening Routine. Coffee now is as simple as either the press of a button or the four beeps indicating the automatic brew time has completed its cycle. Side note, I am delighted the machine has the programmable timer and clock, but for fork's sake, does everything need automation in both professional and personal life? I digress. From here, the goal is either to fully awaken energy so we can plot, plan, and rehearse for the day, or it is to stay in half-zombie mode to bang out the tedious steps that must be made so that fully awake boss lady Lauren can do what she needs to do later in the day. There's a dishwasher to be unloaded, pears and apples to be cut, grapes to be destemmed, oatmeal to be soaked with berries, in addition to classroom time. Music or books are always partners to my morning, and dang it, just as I knew it would, the timer has just called stop. Assignment 5, a scar. Like Harry Potter, I have a scar on my forehead. It is not shaped like a lightning bolt, nor did it come from the ricochet of a death curse of an evil death-eating wizard. I stubbornly refused to put my bowl down on the counter while climbing down from a breakfast bar stool as a child while visiting my grandparents in Brownsville, Texas. My grandmother told me to put it down, and then use both of my hands to climb down, and then retrieve the bowl back from the counter once my feet were firmly on the floor. But all I did was say my favorite word, no. And the next thing I remember was being cradled by my grandmother in her bathroom as she mopped up my face after the impact. Apparently, as I unsteadily rocked the stool, it tipped over and I went forehead first into the top of the back of my grandfather's favorite sports watching chair. Whether that's true or how the memory has been reported back to me from my family, I will never know. My grandmother is no longer with us. She went out doing what she loved, playing golf with her best friends, and I cannot ask her. My father, who spotted a sidewalk block halfway down the street from our house to the community pool where I swam my summers away, used to tell me that the scar was from where he dropped me as a baby, and my skull was so thick I had cracked the block in three. This, at least I know, is simply a joke. But they both imply a certain level of stubborn thick-headedness, which I think is the point of the story and of the scar. And now, a bonus reading from a non-pandemic mind. This writing exercise was from Margaret Atwood's masterclass on writing. The spin on a classic fairy tale. Cinderella stared at the letter in disbelief. The last she had heard, her stepmother had sold her father's house and had moved down the river to a new borough. She did not know what the Institute for Mental Maladies was or why the caretaker had chosen to write to her. Dear Madam Princess Cinderella, I regret to inform you that your mother, Lady Regina Tremaine, has been admitted to our care and may not have much longer in this world to live and breathe. As the days go by, she is less and less lucid, but she asks for you more often than not. Please kindly send word as to whether we might expect your royal visit. Best regards, Reginald Crane, Head Physician and Caretaker, Crane and Loon's Institute for Mental Maladies. She read it again, for the third time, folded the letter, and placed it on her dressing table. She longed for Henry to return from the hunt so that she could ask him what he made of this Crane and Loon business. Alas, he was to be away for the rest of the week, so whatever consideration needed to be made would be met by her and her mind alone. At first, she had a mind to write to one of her sisters, but she had no idea where Anastasia or Drizella had relocated, nor any indication as to whether they still lived together or not. She hoped that at least one of them had married well, and felt that that task would fall to Anastasia, as no man in his right mind would have the patience or fortitude to withstand Grizzly's temper. Perhaps she could ask her maid, Eleanor, if she had heard any news or gossip about her sister's whereabouts. In the meantime, she supposed there would be no harm in answering the doctor's letter. "Dear sir, Dr. Crane, I was very surprised yet thankful to receive your letter. I have not spoken to my stepmother in many years. My own mother passed on when I was but a girl. I'm very sorry to hear that Lady Tremaine is unwell, and hope that you are mistaken in her prognosis. In terms of visiting the patient, I have reservations. Have you attempted to reach her daughters by birth? They would be of so much more use and comfort to Lady Tremaine than I would ever be, seeing as how she locked me in a cupboard to prevent my marrying Prince Henry when last we met. And I am really not convinced she would ever be able to forget that he then banished her from the kingdom in response. I do wish I had a proper address to send you regarding her family, her daughters Anastasia and Grizella, but I simply do not. See that she is comfortable and well looked after, and please do keep me apprised of any changes to her health. Sincerely yours, Princess Cinderella Charming." When her maid came to dress her for luncheon, still seated at her dressing table, she handed over the correspondence and inquired if Eleanor knew any details about the place. Her maid was not a woman of many words, though she had kind, warm hands and a superb eye for detail. She said in her simple way, "No, m'lady," directly to the top of Cinderella's head, tucked an errant curl back into the princess's headband, and turned back out to the corridor. "Well," Cinderella sighed to her reflection, "I suppose that is that." She went about her business of the day and soon forgot the matter entirely until... And this story was never completed. If there's anyone still listening, you can feel free to improvise a final story, beginning with the words, "Once upon a time."